Hello, everyone, and welcome to our first ever podcast. My name is Mandy Mays. I'm the Community Relations Coordinator for the Union County Board of Developmental Disabilities. This podcast is the first of our new video and podcast series focusing on navigating transitions in life. Our first guest, Valerie Fuller, had some great advice to share based on her experiences with her now 19-year-old son, Michael. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned for more video and podcast resources to come.
Hi, this is Jeanette Burry. I'm a service consultant with the Union County Board of Developmental Disabilities, and I am here with Valerie Fuller, who is a parent and guardian of Michael Fuller, an individual who we serve. So if we could just start by having you tell us a little bit of Michael's story and your family's story.
Okay, thanks for having me. The easiest way to start and tell about our story is from the very beginning. I was a high-risk pregnancy, and Michael was born 4 weeks early. The doctor on call at the hospital noticed that there were some anomalies with Michael's features, but nothing that stood out to her to warrant any kind of additional testing. When he was about 9 months old, he started having seizures. And that's what started the whole process of investigating, trying to get a diagnosis. Once we did have that, we were put in touch with the county board and started with early intervention. I believe it was with Jessica.
Wow.
So, a long time ago.
And who put you in touch with the county board?
You know, I'm not for sure. I think the nurses, they asked if we wanted some home visits with a local nurse, and I think that she put us in touch and partnered with everybody and started the whole process. So, yeah.
Great. And what was that early intervention experience like? Was that...
Wow. So it's a lot of... There's a lot of newness, a lot of learning. First of all, just trying to absorb his diagnosis, which he didn't actually even have an official diagnosis for 2 more years after his seizures started. But knowing that they could come to our house, it was comfortable, we could ask questions. They would try to give us tools and resources and things to read and take care of and try to just take it all in. So it was a emotional time, mm-hmm, to have this in our world, but also reassuring that there was someone to guide us.
And at that time, did you know of any other parents, families that were going through similar issues, or did you have some support?
We had family support. Mm-hmm. I don't think we knew of anybody else in our family going through this, at least family-wise. And actually, like, neighborhood-wise, everything was a first for us. Mm-hmm. First child, first everything. We did have support from our parents. I think my mother-in-law was off of work for some reason, and she was able to stay with Michael for the first 6 months so I could go back to work. So we had great support that way. It didn't become challenging until he was a little older. And once Grandma went back to work, it was difficult finding daycare, especially with seizures, and to have an early intervention specialist come to the daycare home for therapies.
Oh,
so
nice.
It was nice that they had that, but it was hard to find someone willing to do that when they're already on their own schedule with other children.
Yes.
So, but yeah, so those were trying days.
Yes. So you gone through many transitions with Michael. He is now
19
yeah. years old. So lots of transitions. What would you say was the most difficult period?
Oh, wow.
So far.
I would say there are lots of transition periods that were challenging, but the most difficult was probably from when he was 1 to age 4, when we couldn't find that daycare. There at the time, there was a definite need, a gap, before he could start at Harold Lewis and finding a provider so I could go back to work. One local daycare asked that I sign a waiver releasing them from all liability in his care. So I was shocked. I'm like, should I just leave him in the parking lot? I don't understand. So that was very challenging. Luckily, I went to my work and said, I'm going to have to quit. We don't have care. And at the time, they did not allow work from home scenarios, but they said, let's do a trial. We are a valuable employee, and we'll try this for 3 months, one day in the office and the rest at home. And so I was able to do that for 8 years. So that was wonderful.
Yes.
Yeah. So that got us through the hardest transition. After that, I would say every time he would switch to a new school, it was more for me than him. But what helped tremendously is open communication and dialogue with the teachers, saying, I don't know what to expect at this new building. Can we set up a meeting ahead of time? Luckily, all of our teachers at Marysville Schools have been beyond helpful. Half of them have come to do home visits and met Michael ahead of time so they can see him in his environment, so they know kind of what to expect and draw him out at school. Mm-hmm. We got to do tours ahead of time of the building where his classroom is, and it just relieved all of my worries.
Yes.
Pretty well, not all of them, but most of my worries. So that open communication dialogue, it's like big proponent of just being able to talk out your concerns is great.
Yes.
Yeah.
And what would you say are the tools or resources that you have found to be most helpful as you're navigating the system?
As far as human tools and resources would be you guys, our service consultants. I call you my person. And we've had great people around us as we've gone. I think we had someone before, but it's based on age, right?
Yes.
So we had someone before helping us navigate, and now we have you helping us navigate into young adulthood.
Yes.
His teachers have been great. Other tools, the internet, huge help. Because when you have a rare diagnosis or any kind of diagnosis, you want to research and do everything you can to find resources nearby. How can I help my child the best? So those are my favorite tools.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And I've heard other parents talk about just various social media sites and groups that they get a lot of information support.
Because you kind of feel isolated at times, but when you have like Facebook special needs groups, you can share, you can even get together with other parents that understand your situation, like, I was going to meet you, but something came up, and they're not going to be offended because they totally get it.
Yes.
Something comes up, whatever.
Yes.
Or they understand your child just might not be having a good day.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's a huge help.
That's great. How do you find resources in the community?
Also through you guys. You guys have our ISPs and I think they're called IEPs. No, what were they called previously? Some people just call them IP.
Oh, yeah, that's it.
So you guys know about Michael's, well, in my case, our son's favorite things to do, his activities, and something might come across your desk and you message me, send me an email. Hey, I just found this neat program and I think Michael might be interested. Here's the information. His teachers have been that way too. That's how we found the hub, the Heart of Unlimited Boundaries, is that one of the teachers sent a pamphlet home knowing that Michael is into racing.
Yes.
And that's other moms are good word of mouth. That's how we heard about a program called A Kid Again. So we found that. Also just the internet and researching. Michael likes to go for long car rides. So we're like, all right, what can we do with this? So we found the national parks have passes for kiddos with disabilities. So let's go to the national parks. It's something to do. It's a long drive. He's going to have a great time.
Yes.
What else? That's just communication. I found it seems to be the answer for everything is putting it out there, what you think might be a need for your kid. Michael loves the movies. We're like, well, he doesn't do well in a theater, but there's some movie theaters that do it for special needs kids.
Yes.
Michael does well at a drive-in because he's contained. And it's his own space, so we can't hear other noise. So we just look around. It's
great. A lot of creativity.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Good. Can you tell us about your experience with providers and now the process of becoming a provider yourself and why you're doing that?
So providers, we haven't been in the provider world for very long, maybe 4 years, I think, is when we started having someone come to the home as a provider. Everyone we've had has been fabulous. And it started with you, I think, to help us bring people into our home to interview. Because I had no clue how to interview people, I kind of had an idea. Like, I just want my kid to be safe and happy.
Right.
And then you were able to ask some other leading questions that I wouldn't have even thought of. Mm-hmm. So based on that communication and dialogue with the provider, we found a couple of perfect fits a few times. Mm-hmm. And keeping communication open with the provider, here's Michael's ISP, this is what we would like to accomplish. If you see other things that you think Michael might be interested in that kind of ties together, let's brainstorm, let's do activities together. So it's a good partnership that way. And providers as a whole, I know we have a huge shortage here. So that's also one of the reasons I started the process to become a provider. Mm-hmm. And Lori here at DD is, she has an easy to follow checklist. It's a paper driven, long, confusing process, but she has a step by step check. So super easy to do.
Good.
My providership is being reviewed now, so I'm not an official provider, but some of us moms of older kiddos, when you're younger, there's moms groups that they do trades with watching each other's kids. So we're thinking maybe we could do that. So we'll take turns watching our own kids and we each get a break and just to help fill in the little bit of a gap of the shortage. We thought that would be a huge help and give us some respite.
You're currently active with a group of moms and you're talking about?
We are. And I met them through Special Olympics.
Okay.
So there's a group of 3, 4, 5 of us that hope to get it. I think one of us is already an official provider and the rest are going through the process, I think. So, okay.
Yeah. Very good.
So, yeah, we'll try it out.
As far as that certification process goes, what are some of the things that are on the checklist that Lori has, or the requirements for becoming required?
I was surprised at how involved it was, but as a parent on that side,
yes,
it gave me relief too. CPR first aid certification, background check. If you're going to be transporting, you need a clean driver's license record, whatever, and proof of insurance. All of this gamut. You have training just to even, like an overview training, just to even start the training.
Mm-hmm.
So you can tell right away if it's something, maybe this isn't for me,
okay,
or whatever. So it helps you decide as a soon-to-be provider if it's something you want. So as a parent, it relieved me that there were so many steps and checks and balances that made me reassured that whoever's coming into my home has been validated, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Good. And are some of those trainings online?
They are. The CPR and first aid certification has to be in person,
mm-hmm,
but I think all the rest were online.
Okay.
So easy to do from home. I could do it after Michael's asleep, or while he's in school,
mm-hmm,
and I could follow along and answer the questions. So, yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Great.
Highly recommend anyone else to do it.
A little bit about Michael, because I like to say he is personality plus.
Oh, my goodness.
And he seems to fall into these situations, I think.
He is one lucky kiddo.
He is one lucky guy. We heard that he met President Obama.
He did.
So could you tell us that story? Tell us how that came about.
Yeah, I think that this kid is going to need his own agent or something soon. So he's a family acquaintance of ours, family friend of ours. It called us with an opportunity to meet President Obama a couple years ago. It was going to be a surprise for Grandma because she's a big fan. And so we had to, like a week ahead of time, had to get background checks and all this stuff ahead of time. Couldn't tell a soul what we were doing for security reasons.
Yes, I don't think you told me
that. No. Yeah, I didn't tell. I called him off of school. I'm like, I can't tell you. He's got an appointment. I figured it was okay to miss school.
I
didn't think they minded. So it was up in Cleveland. So we had to get there, I think, 4 or 5 hours ahead of time because they're going to start closing the roads.
Uh-huh.
And we were going to be blocked out of where we needed to be. So 2-hour drive. And we were at the airport fire department. That's our little holding area where we were screened and everything. So we had to kind of chill there for a while he was doing his speech. And there's Secret Service everywhere. It was kind of crazy. Grandma figured it out after a while. So she's like, what is going on? There's all these guns and vests and stuff. They were wonderful with Michael. They gave him patches and pins and so it was
and he
special.
Ate it up, I'm sure.
He did. I think he was getting a little restless. 4 hours of waiting is long for me.
Mm-hmm.
He did fabulous. Once the time was getting close, they let us all out onto the airfield, the tarmac of the airport, and we could see there's Air Force One.
Mm-hmm.
We're all in a little fenced area. There's maybe 40 of us. We got Michael up to the edge of the fence, and then they tell us he might not stop by.
Oh.
Depends on his schedule. So we're like, 6 hours. Michael's doing great. But finally, here he comes, here he comes. We could see the motorcade coming down around the road or on the tarmac. And he gets out, and they give us instructions of you know, hands visible, nothing in your hands but your phones or cameras. Don't reach over the fence. Secret services around, guns, or we're like, wow. This is crazy. Yes. It was kind of cool.
But exciting.
Yeah, it's exciting. And he only does like a quick minute, like, thanks for coming, how are you? And very personable. And he gets to Michael and he shakes his hand up. Michael won't let go of his hand. And he's holding his hand, both hands. And he actually makes it a point to stop and ask his name, how are you doing? And he's talking to him and he's like, hey, you've got ears just like mine. And it was fabulous. And then he moves on. But it was a great experience. And then afterwards, we could take all the pictures we wanted after the plane, after the president took off. So it was a neat experience. And
you have that on video?
I do on video. He was a superstar at school the next day. Uh-huh. So, yeah.
And how did Michael react to all of that? Was he...
You know, for someone
excited,
because he's nonverbal, mm-hmm. We were unsure how he would react, if he even knew who that was, mm-hmm. but it seemed like he knew, because he was patient for at the time. He was patient, then he was excited, and he was reaching for his hand, and he was just super excited. And then afterwards, he was like, all right, let's go home. But, yeah, like, he knew.
Shut up.
This was it. This was what I was here for. He was amazing. So in some ways, I think he did understand.
Yeah.
But it was exciting. He gets to do everything.
Yes.
he's a good...
Well, and that kind of brings me to my next question. Michael has some fairly significant limitations, physical limitations, but he is one of the most active
individuals that I
know.
He is.
So how do you find activities for him to do, and how do you keep up with him, and how...
Yeah.
How do you know that he wants to do something or doesn't like doing something?
I think like any parent, you pay attention to their likes and dislikes. And mm-hmm. once you have something, like in our world, you know, once you know that, oh, he likes that, let's find more. And so the internet is my friend.
Yes.
So we find activities that he likes. We try to keep him busy and active, just like any other kid, like one sport, one season. So in the winter, he snow skis at Mad River with an adaptive group. He does Miracle League baseball. He does the go-karting. He does Special Olympic bowling. We do road trips because he loves car rides. So, yeah, he loves the beach. So we do the beach and the water and the sand and all that. But what sticks in my head was when he was first diagnosed with seizures. He was 9 or 10 months old. He was little, maybe even younger, I think. Mm-hmm. And his neurologist at the time, she came into the room. She said, yes, he has seizures. But you know what? What does this mean for your child? Honestly, I have no idea. Mm-hmm. But you know what? We don't know any child's future. And that hit me. And I'm like, you're right. You don't. She said, take him home. Love him. Give him everything you can. And show him the world. And so that stuck with me.
That's
amazing.
And that's
kind of what we're doing. And
it's
amazing advice. And it, at such a scary emotional time, that meant so much to us.
I'm sure.
To have that.
Yes.
We're like, you know what? You don't know anybody's. So.
And I'm glad to hear you say that, because I've heard from other parents that have not had that experience. They've had the opposite experience.
And that's a shame. A true shame.
Yes. Yes.
Find another doctor.
Thank you. Do you have advice for them?
Yes. Because don't give up. Advocate for your kid. You know in your heart, I believe, you know what's best. Get second opinions. Don't be afraid to ask questions. Just do what you think is best. That's how you live a good life. Mm-hmm.